notes. I'm not going to make people stay around.
Okay, thank you.
Will the Resources Committee please come to order? We have before us committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 96 by Representative Roepberg. We also have an outstanding resolution by Senator Lincoln. What was your resolution?
SJR 18.
SJR 18, that I had said that if she had the votes, we would take up. Senator Lincoln?
Yes?
You have a motion?
Yes, I do have a motion to...
I don't hear any objections. Do you have a motion?
I do. I have a motion to move SJR 18 out with individual recommendations.
Are there objections? Without objection, SJR 18 moves out of committee with individual recommendations. That's on its way. Now we will go to House Bill 96. Representative Roepberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Norman Roepberg, representative of District 11 in Anchorage. Thank you very much for taking up this legislation. House Bill 96 returns the percentage for all mineral lease royalties and bonuses deposited in the permit fund to the constitutionally mandated 25%. Mr. Chairman, the Article 9, Section 15 of the Alaska Constitution indicates that at least 25% of all such mineral royalties and rents and so forth and bonus payments to the state shall be at the 25% level. Mr. Chairman, this particular bill changes statutory language, which was enacted in 1980, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you may have been here to recall that the amount of unrestricted general funds available in 19 for the 1980 fiscal year was $4.07 billion, at which time the state had sufficient revenues to meet all their general fund obligations and other resources. As a result, I think in the wisdom of the legislature, they decided that with the excess revenues of new leases that ran into after I believe December 1st of 1979, the royalties from those leases and all bonus bids on or after February 15th, 1980, would be deposited into permanent fund corpus at a 50% level. Mr. Chairman, with the diminution of the oil production on the North Slope and the Cook Inlet Basin, we are not able to replace that oil entirely with new production. But the new production that has come on since that time, with leases since that time, which can't match barrel for barrel, is even in production, is being deposited at a 25% higher rate than the ANS Prudhoe Bay and older production is being charged, if you will, or deposited into the permanent fund. This bill merely returns to the constitutional mandate and allows a greater amount of the cash flow from our existing production now and our new production to be deposited at the same rate as being deposited from the Prudhoe Bay fields. Mr. Chairman, there is a graph, or in your package, there is a listing of the various fields that contribute at a greater rate than 25%. For example, even the Prudhoe Bay unit Schrader is at 50%, got zero production. A small portion of Kuparik, Tarn, some of Milne Point, Sag River, Endicott, Sag Delta, Badami Point, Mac, all Alpine will be at 32.5%. North Star will be at 50%. Liberty, and then, Mr. Chairman, if in fact we are successful in any of the exploration in the Naval Petroleum Reserve, and or ANWR, if it is ever opened up, those particular fields would contribute to the corpus at 50%. Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, I draw the committee's attention to the spreadsheet that was prepared by the Department of Revenue, showing what's called the short stack sheet here, and there's a couple of other ones. This is the latest one that I received on this, and it was The revenue estimates for FY 2000, the effective date of the legislation before you, shows $10.96 million in oil revenue increase to the corpus of the permanent fund. It then spreads out with an average of approximately $16 million a year for the next 10 years or so. This particular spreadsheet shows a peak of $27 million in FY 04. Mr. Chairman, this is a small, I believe, part of any particular plan that we have to undertake to adjust our financial condition in the state. I call it a small tile in the whole mosaic to build a plan. I think that because it's merely statutorily changing the revenue flow into the corpus and redirecting into the unrestricted general fund, that it will have a negative impact on the permanent fund dividend, and I think it would be generally acceptable to the people. I've taken a poll in my district, overwhelming support for this type of legislation. Mr. Chairman, I've talked to the Permanent Fund Corporation and know that it would be absolutely, there would be a zero impact on any dividend in 1999. And the closest estimate right now would be only a $1.70 impact on any dividend in an out year at this juncture. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that you consider this bill and pass it out of your committee.
Okay, questions by members of the committee? We requested from the Permanent Fund Corporation, I guess it's the effect over the last decade if this had been in place. Brett, you want to go through this just I guess we don't have any other questions.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Brett Huber, staff to the Resources Committee. Basically, the memo is in response to three questions we asked of the Permanent Fund Corporation. The first question was, if the increase from 25 to 50% had not happened, how much less money would have been deposited into the permanent fund? The second question was, how much less income would have been earned by those deposits had they not been at the 50% level? And the third is, what would the effect have been on permanent fund dividends? The answers to the questions, question number one, how much less money would have been deposited, was $80,599,795. And figuring that amount, an average rate of return for the 9 years at 9.95% would have earned an additional $66.6 million. The impact on the last dividend distributed, had it been at the 25% for those years instead of the 50%, would have been $60.54 for each dividend. In addition, we asked the question of the Permanent Fund Corporation, but they have not gotten the exact numbers back. What would have the impact been if over that same time period 100% instead of the 50% would have been deposited? The math says that that answer would have been an additional $322 million would have been deposited, which would have earned an additional $264 million for an impact on the dividend of $252 in the last distribution.
That's something like if we'd gone to the something like the CREMO plan and saved 100% of our ownership share. Is that what that represents, basically?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there questions by members of the committee on the sponsor? If we don't have any questions, we have signed up to testify Ed Martin, Sr.
Okay. My name is Ed Martin, Sr., Chairman Halford, and members of the committee here. I have something I believe is of interest to you and certainly interest of the folks in my area, the Kenai-Soldotna general area. This is not the complete peninsula that I'm speaking for. I'm speaking for only that area around Kenai-Soldotna general area. When Is it okay to sit down here?
Go ahead. What we have before us, I mean, I realize that your interest is broader than what we have before us. What we have before us is one piece of the puzzle with regard to permanent fund income, a proposed change that would reduce the income going into the permanent fund. Many of the proposals before us in this legislature deal with income coming out of the permanent fund. But just
well, so. essentially, what our interest is certainly is the permanent fund dividend, and we would like to make a statement through this petition that essentially says, and I could read it verbatim, or tell you essentially what we are saying: we do not want you to in any way consider capping or using any money from the permanent fund dividend at all without a vote of the people. That is essentially, I can read it verbatim, but that is essentially what we're talking
if
about.
If it's short, you can read it. If it's
yes,
long,
it's very short. No, it's only sentences or so, sir.
Okay.
I made it very, very short, as you can see. Government by the people. We the people, the state of Alaska and the United States of America, declared that this state's government is to do what is best interest for the people. We believe that there are ways to generate revenue that do not solely affect the permanent residents of Alaska. The undersigned demand that the permanent fund dividend program must not be changed, capped, or discontinued without a majority vote of the people of Alaska, period. That is, in essence, what these people are agreeing to.
Now, okay, how many signatures do you have on that?
Right now I have, in this folder, 8,866. Before I left my house this morning, I can confirm that I have over 9,000 in hand. Of course, my wife's got them in her hand, and it wasn't put in the folder. But in this, I have 8,866 right here, and I guarantee, Scout's Honor, there is 9,000 signatures that say, in essence, what I just read to you. The comments that I heard along the way, and I just took these petitions to the businesses, about 150 in the general area of the Kenai-Soldotna area, not anywhere else. I did not go to Seward. I did not go to Homer. I did not go to Anchor Point. The people, what they said, I condensed it down into this one-page thing here. If you'd like to hear it, fine, or I can just leave it with the rest of it.
Again, if it's short, go ahead.
This is it. I can read it to you if you'd give me the opportunity. Thank you, sir. And this is a condensation of what they said, and I tried it to the best of my ability to do it. It reads, "A time for a new approach to our budget problem has come. The tree has bore so much fruit, it has weakened and threatened its own survival. Shortfall, keyword to justify more burden to the people. Shortfall really means government overspending and its hunger for more money. What government needs is to live within the funds it already has, not spending more. We should concentrate on government efficiency, how to maintain the services needed at a reduced cost, contracting to private businesses, all services needed that does not require permanent employees of government. What savings could be realized by the citizen that pays the bill? Why hire someone in government to do 100 days work a year, which would require training, salary benefits, including insurance, hospitalization, pension costs, pension per diem, travel, transportation, car or truck whenever needed, when contracting to one who is already trained and does the work as a specialist? When contracting to one who is already trained, bonding ensures the taxpayer gets his money's worth. Government employees does not give us that efficiency. We have a very serious problem when we Alaskans are paying in excess of $10,000 per man, woman, and child for government and its services, while other states in the union spend around $3,000 per person per year. With that in mind, how can we justify any increases in funding? What is needed is better management in government spending. How can lowering the standard of living of all Alaskans by taking away the permanent fund dividend improve the betterment of its people? It cannot. What it will do is hurt the least able amongst us, the children, the elderly, the disabled, and the persons who is trying to raise a family. Why not let the people have this dividend to spend as they choose? This will help the economy of Alaska. Instead of requiring the less fortunate to look for more public assistance, which would in turn cost more, administrating, maintaining enforcement of a greater public assistance program should not be our goal. We as a state are very fortunate. We have a tremendous resources, land, oil, gas, timber, minerals, and the geographic position as a hub to the Pacific Rim. Why not use these resources and manage government more efficiently? The true goal should be for the people to have every opportunity to prosper in this great state. I'm sure the government of Alaska has enough trained people in Juneau to figure this out. If not, when election time comes, our elected officials will be replaced by those who will follow the will of the people. The time has come to say enough is enough. It is time to change attitudes and manage our government to benefit all Alaskans, the people who pay the bill. And this, as I say, is their signatures. And I do know there's considerably more coming, because now I understand, as of last week, this petition has been sent to Fairbanks, Wasilla, Seward, and I understand Homer and Valdez. This is my understanding. I do not know anything about collecting them because I'm not involved with it. I'm only speaking for what I did in the Kenai, Soldotna area alone. Just, and I want that understood, that this is not statewide. I did not do it statewide. Yes, sir.
Okay. Just coming back to, you know, before us is a relatively small piece of a permanent fund change, a small piece that would reduce dividends by, it looks like, a few dollars prospectively, $60 retrospectively, depending on how you compute it. But I assume it is your point that there should be no change.
No, none.
Regardless of how small or how large, without a vote of the people. And obviously you're saying you don't want to change.
The specifics of it is, and it's not just my opinion, sir. This is, I'm trying to fairly present this to this committee. The people are telling me no way. What they really want, and to be honest, straight talk to you folks here, they want government to clean up its act. They want people in government to bring this down to a reasonable amount of money for government. Then we're not afraid of exploring other avenues. But we want to see first that you privatize, if that may be. My experience as a director of public works for the city of Wasilla, believe me, that's the way to go. That's my experience. If you listen to that, that's fine. I ran the city of Wasilla during its high growth period, 85 and 86. I was director of public works under Charlie Bumpus, the mayor. And I ran that city during that change period with four permanent employees. I had about six or eight temporaries. But I had my problems, but I contracted out, and believe me, I did very well as far as saving dollars is concerned. And I did it efficiently. Wasilla is a great little city today, I believe, because of that, sir. I believe government needs to have that kind of attitude. I don't know all the answers, but I know it worked for me. And essentially, people are saying that to me. I was just amazed, and I cannot emphasize enough, amazed. I figured I'd get 1,500 or 2,000 signatures because people don't like you to reach in their pocket and take some money. But this is less than a month of only my effort with another gentleman helping me make the, you know, the copies. And I produced 9,000 voices here, all saying the same thing. I did not alter this. They were saying essentially, do not touch the permanent fund dividend without a vote of the people. They feel that is fair. I feel that's fair, sir. I wouldn't, on my own nickel now, this is my own nickel. Nobody give me money here. On my own nickel, come down here. I believe that much into it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Taylor. Any questions?
Yeah, well, first I wanted to tell you I was a little late getting up here by about 5-10 minutes. I was talking with your son on the telephone.
Oh, you was? Well, there's two different people here. One's a junior, one's a senior. Well, I hope you don't mix the two.
Very well. He just wanted me to, to tell you that he loves you and he's proud of you for being here.
Well,
and I wanted to
appreciate
that,
that
great word. And I also had talked and called back when I got the message. I talked to your wife, wished her a happy Mother's Day. But I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate the fact that you on your own made this effort. I watched the what they call the Superstation. I don't know if you remember what channel it's on up in Anchorage right now. I think it's Channel 8 down here. But they always ask a question, you know, of the public every week. And and about 3.5-4 weeks ago, they asked the question, is it time is it time to use the permanent fund to support state government? And I happened to be tuned in that Friday evening when they announced the results of their week-long poll. And according to their poll, it was one of the largest responses they'd received on a question. And it was 80% no, 20% yes.
Rest my case.
I conveyed that to the legislature on the floor of the Senate. I've also taken polls both in my district and statewide on the same subject. The numbers were very similar, in the high 70s. I know that Representative Al Osterman took a similar poll. Senator Phillips has taken polls. I think there's at least five other polls that have been taken by members of the House or the Senate during this period of time, and they all got very similar results to that which you're expressing here today. I just want to thank you very much for taking the time and the effort to do what you did.
I appreciate that, Senator. I just would like to add one note to this. We all learn, and you know, by our experiences. I have been an assemblyman. I have been a planning and zoning commissioner. I have been these different things. And I'm not saying that to in any way do nothing but translate that I understand when people talk and they want to say something that is really meaningful. What they're really telling me in straight talk right now, they're going out and get registered to vote. They are very angry with the attitude of government throwing more money at something instead of really trying to fix what's wrong. Every year we have to throw more money at the situation. What we want is a change of attitude, and that's what they're really looking at. That's straight talk, or I believe they will answer it in the polls. Thank you very much. Yes,
Senator Lincoln and then Senator Mack.
Yes.
I just want to express my appreciation also for you coming down and having all of the effort to collect the signatures on the petition. I hope that we get a copy of your letter because I'd like to take...
Yes, I'll leave this with you.
Okay, I'd like to take some time to review the letter that
I had English. I'm not too good at that.
But also I want to ask you how you collected the signatures. Was that by... in a mall or on the street or knocking on the doors? Or
very good question. Looking at this, as I said, I really only hope for 1,000 or 1,500, 2,000 signatures. And I had the choice of going door to door or whatever, but I was hearing an awful lot from the business community. And I thought, well, I'll put it in the the business communities on their desks where they do business. And if people want to sign it, fine. If they don't, and I'll collect them. The business communities are really, really upset in that you're taking that much money out of the system. This is going to bankrupt some people. It is, because their margins are quite close. They don't want that money taken out of the system. These people get their check in October and they go buy a snowmobile or they go buy whatever. That money stays in that community and generally is used. Not always, but generally. The business community is really upset on that point. So they were very receptive to me leaving this thing at their they was pushing it, and they were telling me how they felt. That's why I condensed it down the best I know how in this piece of paper. That's how it happened. They're really saying, you're hurting us, you're lowering the standard of living of all Alaskans by doing this. Take another method. If you want to, if you need more funds, you've got land. Sell land. Do something like that. Bring a tax base in. They're very receptive to that. They really are. But they don't want you reaching in their pocket and taking away, especially families where there's a lot of children. Those children are going to be harmed by taking that money away from that family. That family may be kept from getting on the welfare rolls. And if we have to get them on the welfare rolls, we've got to administer that, and that costs more money. You're not saving bucks taking it away from them. That's how they look at this. That's how they rationalize this. And frankly, I got to agree with them. That's why I spent my own bucks buying this $519 ticket, even though I'm a senior. I'm 68 years old. I should be just sitting there watching you folks. I did my service already. But it means that much. I see the least able amongst us are hurt. The elderly, they can't earn any more money. Are you trying to lower the standard of living? Heck no, you gentlemen are not. You really don't want to do that, and I know you don't. Don't mess with the dividend. Go some other route. Get some land out or do something of that nature, sir. I'm sorry, but I get emotional sometimes, but it does mean quite a bit to all of us. They asked me to come down and speak for them the best I know how.
A hard question.
Yes.
If we had gone through all the steps of privatization, streamlining, reducing overlapping management, and so forth, and we finally got to the point where there was general agreement that we needed another $100 million to operate what we all considered was essential government services, what would your choice be in terms of the way to generate it? And I understand that resource development and the long-term things, land disposal, are good things, don't get me wrong. But in the short term, if you were forced to make choices amongst negative alternatives, I'm just curious personally where yours would be. I know where mine would be, and I'm just
curious. Sure. This would be the port of last call, and that would have to really be severe to get into that. If I was governor or a person in position here, I would say that would be the last place I would look. I would look, yes, to resources development. That's a biggie. To me, it is. That's the logic in my head. Privatization, you haven't even begun to scratch the surface on that. I know how much money I saved over in the little city of Wasilla. You ought to look at that record. I'm proud of it. It can be done. To really get down to the nuts and the bolts of it, I think we should run government like we run our family. We know how much money's coming in, and we live within that parameters. That's not what's happening. What we're doing every year, we're trying to justify, and that's why they started off with this thing. The key word back here a little while ago was shortfall. Shortfall of what? The price of oil went down here a few months ago, and now it's, I think it was $16 or $17 the last I looked at it. So we know these things fluctuate. We know that. But we have a rainy day account for that anyhow. Nothing wrong with using that rainy day account. That's what it's for. Don't cry wolf before the roof falls in. That does not mean that you shouldn't look ahead and say, well, what should we do in case of this or that? That was wise to look ahead and get that rainy day account. Now, we can look ahead with resources, and we can say, land, let's get it taxable. Let people out there get something out of this experience of being an Alaskan. Give us opportunities. Don't take it away from us. I come up in 1957. By golly, I homesteaded. I had $35 in my pocket. I did not have a job, and in front of God in this Senate, I didn't have no money beside that. I didn't know anybody. I homesteaded, and I'm still here because of opportunity. Give me opportunity. Don't take my money and take it away, the opportunity. I guess I'm a little bit...
Further questions?
I hope you'll excuse that. Just don't do this every day.
Just so that I didn't,
yes,
didn't ask you a question that I'm afraid of the answer of.
Certainly.
Before I would take anything from the permanent fund of the taxes that I don't like but would probably accept, it would probably be a statewide sales tax.
I would have to agree with you on that. That's the way I'd do if I was sitting in your seat, but I'm not. And I would go by land sales.
It's just unfair to ask tough questions that you don't want to answer yourself.
Well, I do want to answer that, sir. That's what they're telling me out there, too.
Sure.
Now, don't get me wrong. These people say, and if you'll give me the opportunity here, they're saying this, that if you want a sales, if worse come to worse and you want a sales tax route, you are then taxing people that either tourist or anybody comes in is making sales. They got enough money to buy something, they're going to pay a tax on it. You're not going to take the rent money away from them. You're not going to, what this thing would do.
It's not just from Alaskans.
Well, yeah, it's not just from Alaskans. I don't know how to make it more pure. The thing is, I think that's probably the best route to go. I am not in the learned position you gentlemen are. I don't have these facts in front of me all the time. But I can tell you one thing. Anybody who, right now, and I'm going to, this is straight talk, anybody goes to take this permanent fund dividend away from these people is committing political suicide. As I say, I have been a public official, a man of, in your position, maybe a smaller. And I do understand politics. And believe me, anybody messes with this, believe me, is going to have to pay the price. That's the only thing I can add to it.
Senator Taylor?
And I don't mean to be so rough, but this is straight talk.
Right. And while you're down here, I want to thank you, first off, for your communication to me concerning the land bill that I've sponsored. And
got a land bill?
Yeah,
yes.
Trying to get some land out there. And That bill's hung up in finance right now. I haven't had one of these resource bills come out yet this year. And so while you're here, if you could take the time.
I most certainly will. That's what I'm here for.
Some of those same concerns that I have about providing Alaskans with a little bit of an opportunity and maybe expanding our tax base instead of constricting it. If you could do that, by the way, I've been working too with Mike Byrne, who's got an initiative that he's working on out there on land also to try and get some land into the hands of Alaskans and away from these government entities that own it. If you could do that while you're here, I'd really appreciate it.
Can I leave one thought with you here on this land thing? I can really say honestly and truthfully, the thing that really helped me the most in Alaska was the opportunity to homestead. That wasn't given to me. I had to earn it. Believe me, I had to. But it gave me the opportunity. I want my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids to have opportunities too. I don't necessarily say it has to be exactly the way it was for me when I was there, but give these people opportunity. You've got some great people up here. You really do. And I guess I said all I can say.
Thank you. That was a little off the subject.
Thank you.
But I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
I'm a little bit camera shy.
We are getting a little bit off the case. We have, again, one bill, which is one piece, and it is in comparison to some of the plans that we're hearing out there, a fairly minor piece in its impact. But it does kind of open the question of the permanent fund, the contribution rates, and so forth. So thank you for your...
Well, I want to leave these with you, and these are yours right now, and I worked hard, and I'm probably going to get you some more, so look out.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you so much for hearing me.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
We have Senator Jerry Ward signed up to testify, and because we've gone fairly far off of the initial start of the bill, we're going to go back to Representative Roachberg as well.
8 minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mark, I thought you said Senator Lincoln and then Senator Mack.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Committee there. Okay.
Chair, I don't want to bring him back up here now.
I did.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Jerry, I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, this will take 8 minutes to do it. If I can, I met with the person that runs the programs for the Senate majority and House majority, and I asked them to run a program for me on the new majority plan from the House, what it would look like if that plan started.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mackey.
I have to object. This doesn't have anything to do with this legislation.
Yeah, it does. It's a permanent fund. I'm talking about...
It doesn't have anything to do with this legislation, nor did the last speaker, and I appreciate the fact, Mr. Chairman, that you gave the consideration to the gentleman who has done a lot of work on it. But we're talking about a plan here. This is turning into a dog and pony show about a plan, that there's an appropriate place for that. I would like to move that we move HB 96 from committee with individual recommendations. I'll deal with the legislation that we have in front of us.
Okay, we have a motion to move House Bill 96. We have objection. At this point, it would be debate amongst members of the committee. If the motion fails, then we'll go back to the member testifying. Frankly, if it were a member of the public, I would say the motion would be out of order. We are all here, so we can come back to this.
Yeah, we're all going to get to the point eventually anyway.
Mr. Chairman, if I can...
Senator.
I mean, we're turning into a hearing about the permanent fund and long-range fiscal plans. That's not what the Resources Committee is dealing with on this bill. I think it's really taking away from the member that sponsored the legislation and dealing with this specific issue. And I realize we've got all the media here and the camera and all that kind of stuff, and it's a good opportunity, but I just strongly object to it. I did not object when the gentleman was making his comments. I actually had asked for an opportunity to engage with him in some discussion, but wasn't given that opportunity. He traveled down here. I understand. I appreciate you giving him that leeway, but I think that there's a forum for this, and I just think it's inappropriate.
Well, his petition specifically dealt with changes to the permanent fund, which the bill before us does. So I don't think there's any question that his petition was absolutely in order with regard to the consideration of legislation. I haven't heard enough about this plan.
I've signed up. I can tie it in as we go through. I signed up to testify because this bill was here and it had to do with the permanent fund. But if I could just get going here a little bit, I think it'd take about maybe 7 minutes now.
Well, Senator Mackey. Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Chairman, if it is to move the bill out, and that's the motion that's before us, I would have to vote no on that because I haven't asked the questions that I want of the sponsor. And I do have some questions to ask of the sponsor. It's not, if you could tie it into, I would like to have this tied in somehow to the bill. I don't want to hear a plan, but I'm not ready to move this bill out because I haven't had an opportunity to discuss it with the sponsor as well.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Taylor.
Just discussing the motion before us, this legislation does eliminate by 25% the amount of certain deposits being made into the fund. I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing to do, but it certainly does have impact on it.
That's and a I huge like, stretch.
And no, I'm not talking about what this senator who wants to testify is talking about. I'm talking about the motion, which is to move the bill. I, too, have questions about whether or not that's good public policy to change that, and I agree with Senator Lakin. I wouldn't be prepared to move the bill at this point. I'd have to vote against that. At the same time, I may like the bill.
Is this, Mr. Chairman, does this have to do with this legislation, or is there a proposed amendment or anything else? Or is this Senator Ward's financial plan for closing the fiscal gap?
I think you have to ask Senator Ward, and if he has a chance to explain it, he has to tie it together. And Senator Ward, you've got to tie it together in the beginning, not in the end.
If I can get one sentence out, I will.
Yes or no answer would work real well.
We've got a motion before us as a point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we
to
do.
Move a bill, and I thought our discussions were to be restricted to that motion, not about what may be coming up after this motion is decided.
You are correct.
I will withdraw my motion to move the bill. Senator Lincoln does have further questions of the sponsor.
And I do.
And when this portion of the dog and pony show is over, I'll come back and be available to help move the bill.
Okay. Senator Ward.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would be
back to
okay, I would be opposed to this legislation because this legislation would alter what I think would be the proper course for the state of Alaska. And if I could have about 6 minutes now, I'd be able to explain why. I've handed out a document to people. I asked the Senate Majority Finance person to run the following numbers for me without this legislation in it, into the permanent fund equations, with this legislation not being in it. And they did. And I said to run it starting after the November election and starting the House Majority Plan, which was issued yesterday, and they show me the program of it going out into the future. And it can start at the year 2001 after the November election. The state actually has as much money, if not a little bit more, not waiting until after the November election. I also have taken the governor's tax plan. The same equation works there. His tax plan takes effect and works the same way, waiting until after the November election. And then I also had him run with Representative Roberg's bill not in it, into a resource development plan, which has an aggressive resource development in it, and it increases the dividends to where we have a tremendous economy going with the development of resources. Mr. Chairman, both finance committees of House and Senate have clearly stated within the performance that there is no reason whatsoever to do anything other than go into the CBR and put this on the November ballot for an election at the next general election ballot. And so the skies falling in stuff doesn't work unless you pass some piece of legislation like this. If we just simply leave it as it is right now, have the public debate on the House Majority Plan, the Governor's Plan, and a Resource Development Plan, then in fact, we will still be in good enough financial condition when the new legislature comes in January of 2001 to implement any one of these three plans, depending on what the debate was and the understanding of them. And if I may, for just a minute here, I know it's a little duck. Go ahead.
Okay, coming back.
This bill can't be enacted for this to work.
Okay. That's what you're saying, and what I understand you're saying, is what Mr. Martin has said, is no changes without a vote of the people. You're proposing a particular way, I guess, of reaching that vote of the people so they have a meaningful input into that process.
Yes, we have an existing plan now. I saw the plan of the House Majority yesterday. I've asked for a copy of it. They said that there's an embargo on it because they want to wait to a press conference tomorrow. I had him start the House Majority Plan, which incidentally isn't the whole majority, by the way. I've had too many representatives come to me. But if you start their plan after the November election, it works just fine, exactly how they planned it to. If you start the governor's plan, which is the income tax and the deposit of the $4 billion, after the November election, it works exactly the same. Both of them can live off CBR. If you start the resource development plan, which is aggressively developing some of our 103 million acres, it works the same way as starting it tomorrow. All of these plans can wait till after the November election, and they can have a debate out in the public, but they won't work if you pass Representative Roberg's bill. Because the permanent fund, in order to achieve this particular goal, for the resource plan to show the way it is, to have this amount of money going into the private sector, we need to make sure that the dividend plan stays exactly the way it is for this plan to work. That's why I'm here today. That's why I've handed out. There is no misunderstanding what we're talking about in the legislature. There may be some legislators that don't like this and don't want to talk about it, but we don't have to have the permanent fund plan from the House majority today. We can have it after the November election. We don't have to have the governor's tax plan. We can have it after the November election, and we can have the resource development plan. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Taylor.
I did have a question.
Yes, please.
Concerning Representative Roakberg's bill. Did you do any runs through all this? I mean, you've got four or five runs here of what each of the various schemes that are dreams or plans that are out there may or may not do. Did you do any run that indicated what the impact would be by only placing 25% of some of certain deposits into the fund, which would be the change enacted by Representative Roakberg's bill, as opposed to having 50% of those specific deposits, and we all know they're different, go into the bill?
We have done those runs. We don't have them here, and they would harm the dividend program.
Well, I think we had staff already testified to the fact that it might be $10 or
prospectively, $11. It would be less than 10. Retrospectively, it looks like if you applied it back over the last 10 years, it might be as high as 60. Mm-hmm. And you don't know but it'll be lower than that, obviously, going forward, because the lease incomes are lower.
And I'm here saying that I am opposed to that plan or any plan that alters the dividend program.
Okay, but to the extent we might, through this committee and eventually through the Senate, that we might pass Representative Roakberg's bill, it would diminish some of the numbers that you've
yes.
given to us here by maybe as much as $10 or less per dividend. It'd be times 600. So what do we have, 6 million, roughly? By about?
Actually, Representative Roakberg has 16, 20 million going out into the future.
16 to 20 million. Okay.
Depends on the lease schedule and what leases it. Remember this.
So even though it is not a great impact, I just wanted to emphasize that. Even though it certainly is not a great impact, $10 relative to 15 to 1700 is a very small percentage. There would be, by the passage of this legislation, a slight impact upon future dividends, and that would impact each of the runs that you have presented us with today relative to the different plans, either the House or the governor's tax plan or whatever. I want to thank you for doing that work, but I did want to emphasize that those numbers would be lessened through the passage of this legislation, even if it is very slight.
That is correct. And with that, I think that packets to you, the simple fact is, if I can summarize, we got $50 billion that we're going to need. We're going to spend between 2004, when the CBR runs out. We're going to have $39 billion coming in. We need to fill it in with $11 billion. And I think that the people of Alaska very clearly want resource development. That's what I think that the option they'll pick. And I think that it is wrong to alter the permanent fund dividend whatsoever until we've had this vote in November. And I wanted to make sure that this was on the record. And whether other senators like it or other legislators like it, it makes no difference. The people deserve this, and they deserve to know more of what a plan is than a press release in the Anchorage Daily News and a grab of the dividend program.
Senator Lincoln.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate you keeping your plan down succinctly to what it is doing. I guess, Senator Ward, you hit upon what I wanted to ask of the Representative Roakberg on the bill, is that you're talking about tomorrow that there's going to be a press conference from the House majority on what their plan is. I understand that there's maybe some kind of a plan that's being worked out on
yes.
the Senate side. And we're now, 14, 16 days
mm-hmm.
to adjournment? I mean, we're less than 20 days to adjourn. 12 days to adjournment. And we still do not have a plan And there's all of these plans out here, including, I guess, your plan. And I'm concerned with the House Bill 96 of being a part of a plan that no one seems to have ownership of, or the majority anyway of both houses do not have a plan of action or a long-term plan for us. So I don't want us to piecemeal this and then find out it doesn't tie into some kind of a plan. And
absolutely.
And so I appreciate you expressing the concern as well for lack of a plan, and that we haven't seen one. That is a concern of mine, a big concern of mine. And also, and I will get back and ask Representative Rokeberg, that regardless of the minimal impact that this is to have, I think it was $60-some at the maximum, $60-some a year, $65 might mean a lot to a family that accumulatively might end up with hundreds of dollars. And I do want to see any change in our permanent fund to be put out to the general public for a vote. I think that's what the people want. I might not agree necessarily about how we come to balancing our budget, but certainly for the people to be able to vote on whether the use of the permanent fund. So
thank you, and I won't take any more of the committee's time, but I am opposed to this because it does alter the plan, and very basically the permanent fund plan will be released by the House majority tomorrow. They have embargoed the spreadsheets. That's why you only have a press release in here instead of the spreadsheets. They refused to give it to me because I started the House majority plan after the November election, and it works perfectly, and it panicked them, Mr. Chairman. I also started the governor's, I'm calling it the governor's plan, but it's the tax plan, and I started it after the November election, and it works exactly the same dips, and we fall off the cliff about 14 years from now. The resource plan that I proposed is in here, and the runs are on it, and it says in the year 2004, we have to have resources online, or else we have to make severe cuts or find other revenue. I believe that the state is up to the resource development plan. And I was here in 1982. People says, oh, it takes too long to get it off. If we have 60 working legislators, we can develop as much property as we want. And I think that we need to debate, Mr. Chairman.
Can I ask
Senator
one more
Lincoln.
Question? And perhaps this should be of Representative Rokeberg, but when you talked about the CBR going to a November ballot, are you talking about perhaps having a special election? Or are you waiting for the November of the general election?
No, I'm waiting for the November general election because this is such a grave matter that I want all three plans, and all three of them do exist. We have a few people ducking every now and then, but all three of these plans have been in existence for some time. And, Senator, if you haven't got them, it isn't because I wasn't able to give them to you, but they are in existence. We will see the last plan come out tomorrow. I've already seen the thing, but I want it to be on the November ballot because then we have a general election. The CBR carries us until 2004, so we got plenty of time. That way we have 50 legislators up for election. We have a congressman up. We have things on the ballot. We have debate. We literally have an opportunity to discuss these various plans, and that's what I want.
I appreciate you making me aware that plans are forthcoming because the only plan that I have seen is the governor's plan.
I got
plan.
You two of them now. I almost got you the third one, but I couldn't get it out of them. But I'll get it tomorrow after their press conference.
So this being one of the plans you're talking about.
There's two plans in there. No, the first one, the permanent fund plan, is the House majority plan, but they embargoed it till they're pressed.
And the other plan is your resource development plan.
It's in there, and so is the governor's tax plan.
And the governor's tax plan.
Yes.
Thank you.
So there's only two plans in there and a press release.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's go back to Representative Rokeberg since he has opened the debate on probably a much broader issue than he intended.
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly true. I'd just like the committee to be aware. I've actually been working on this bill for several years, and I just thought, given the situation, that it revolves around our financial condition, that perhaps the political climate was ripe for the legislature to look at this as a change in public policy, which I think is a very rational, common sense approach. Mr. Chairman, just briefly, I would say I appreciate Mr. Martin's comments down here. I agree in large part with him, except for some of his conclusions, and I appreciate his concern and the people of the state's concern in our financial condition. But I think, Mr. Chairman, what people will realize is that, number one, I introduced this legislation like 2 or 3 months ago. It was not part of a master plan, and it never was, but now it's been adopted. And I think it will be adopted. It has been adopted by the House. It probably will be adopted by the Senate. I think if Senator Ward takes a look at it, given the fact that this speaks to resource development revenue for an increase of resource development to take place in the state, and if we have new resource leases that contribute only half to the general fund and half to the corpus of the permanent fund, we're going to be in a short cash flow situation that we find ourselves in now. So I think on further economic analysis that Senator Ward will come to embrace this legislation. Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, this has been used as part of a tile of a whole plan, the part of that mosaic, but it was not intended initially for that purpose. And I think it can stand on its own merits, because this year, based on the spreadsheet I have, it generates only $11 to $12 million depending on what the ultimate price of oil is going to be. And I think that money is going and being directed to the general fund and not the permanent fund ultimately will reduce the demand and the need for additional taxation in this state. Mr. Chairman, I posit that this bill will help avoid taxes, because I share with Mr. Martin, Senator Ward, and I'm sure the majority of this committee, that desire to avoid unnecessary taxation in any form. Ultimately, we may need it. Senator Ward indicated, and he testified, that he would need additional revenues in the year of 04. And therefore, Mr. Chairman, I submit that this could be a small and potential source, that it's relatively painless because it's merely a statutory change. And one reason I brought this bill now was it is a statutory change and needs to go and pass through the House and the Senate and have a full hearing and a full review to make sure that the people of this state believe it's a correct public policy. And I think we can make that argument because it's just common sense. It makes a lot of sense, and I think it will contribute to the healthy fiscal condition of the state without putting undue burden on the people. You can, Mr. Chairman, I would also point out, I do have a letter from the Permanent Fund Corporation. I was trying to get the impacts on this, but this is so early. It goes back, well, this just comes from April. It says this will have zero impact on the dividend this year, as I mentioned, and have $1.70 next year. They didn't offer to run out any further numbers. I think what even Senator Ward said, that the impact would be less than probably $10, not the $66. You mentioned that was prospective. But, Mr. Chairman, I know you're very well aware of the power of money and the time value of money. The retrospective added amount of $66 is prospective. That doesn't mean the compounding effect will go forward. It would depend on the amount of revenues generated. So I don't think that's a real fair analogy. The totality of the net present value backwards would be significantly less than that. So I think you need to make a caveat if you use that statement. I would challenge that as a valid comparison. I agree that the totality of the amount might add up to that, but that doesn't mean that the impact on the future dividend would be the same. Not when this next year would only be $1.07. So I think it's a relatively de minimis impact there, with a larger impact on the general fund revenues available. And even at that, it's relatively small. My concern, Mr. Chairman, is that any new lease, the Alpines and the other fields that may come online, even the MPRA, if we're successful there with the new major leases. For example, Mr. Chairman, the lease revenue that was over $100 million, if this bill had been in effect, assuming we had the 90%, 90-10 split off that, and less the provisions of state statute for local community sharing, we could have stood to gain an extra $30 million of general fund revenue if this bill had been in effect, if we had received all the total benefits of that sale. It wouldn't work out to those numbers, but to cite an example, last year, Mr. Chairman, we had the first area-wide leasing sale on the North Slope, which I was the author of that bill. We generated the fourth highest revenue in the state's history, $53 million in bonus bids. That's the fourth highest. We would have picked up an extra $12.5 million in bonus monies from that sale last June if this bill had been in effect. That would have gone into the general fund and not into the corpus. So here we're talking about allocation. That's all we're talking about. We'll have a very minimal impact on the dividend and have it help fill in our gap and what our needs are in terms of spendable general fund money.
Just so you know where I come from, every dollar that you generate for the general fund and today's needs and today's spending is coming directly from the principal of the permanent fund under that change. We're still spending $1 billion of unearned income and not paying the bill for whatever those services are. So, you know, I still believe that we are spending more than our share of the non-renewable resource trust to all generations of Alaskans. If I could go backward, it would be to say that we should spend only tax revenue and that all of the ownership share of those resources should have been in a fund, and the income from that ownership share go into the combination of government services, dividends, and whatever people chose. But what we are doing in this generation is continuing the pattern that in 30 years has spent three-quarters of the combined wealth of the richest oil field in North America. Now, because we have a reduction in our unearned income and we can't seem to make it, we're putting today's needs above the needs of tomorrow. And tomorrow, we're going to have a lot less oil revenue and need a lot more in terms of permanent fund revenue. So and there can be arguments either way on all of that. I understand that. But I believe that the needs of today are too well represented in the system, and the needs of tomorrow are not represented well enough, and that some of these changes we would make are best expressed in the bumper sticker on the big motorhome going down the road that says, we're spending our children's inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share that with you. I would say that ever since I've been a member for 5 years, we've reduced the budget, perhaps with one exception. It's certainly arguable. Last year, we're not done yet. Right? But I share that. I believe my credentials as a fiscal conservative are well known, and I am proud of those. And as a member of the Alaskan business community for some three decades or more, that's one reason I ran for public office, to make sure we ran this government in a more businesslike and effective and efficient manner. So I will say this, Mr. Chairman, I think my conservative credentials are impeccable, and that therefore I still have the courage to bring forward this legislation because I think it's the right fiscal policy. I also don't think we can save ourselves into prosperity either. The gap in the leap right now is too great. I'm not here to defend an overall plan or anything else. That's not my intention. But on the other hand, it is certainly time that we have to reinvent the wheel and find a new direction.
Senator Mackey?
Yeah, I just wanted to understand, Mr. Chairman, what you were saying about when the oil revenues decrease in the future, which we all know they're going to do, production probably being the biggest reason. Why are you suggesting then that we would be in a position to use the fund to fund government services and better later than now? I didn't quite understand
I would, if you look at oil production, it continues to go down at a fairly consistent rate and then levels out and goes forward for many, many years after that. When you get to that level, then I think people might make a decision that they want to use permanent fund income as part of their services. I want them to get to make that choice, and I believe that choice is still out in front of us. We all look at life a little bit toward what we think we would give our kids and our grandkids in terms of their choices, and I know that I won't agree with everything that my kids and grandkids would decide to do, but they've only got one quarter of the wealth of Prudhoe Bay and its interest. this political generation from 1969 to now has spent $70 billion with a combined population averaging less than a half a million people over that time frame. We probably have a world spending record. We also, luckily, have at least a free world savings record in the permanent fund. I just want to pass it forward, and I don't know what they're going to decide and when they're going to decide it. I want them to get the decision.
Well, my concern was that if we don't make some fiscal policy decisions that allow us an opportunity to have a balanced budget in the future, aren't we also setting up our children, and I have young children like you, Mr. Chairman, setting them up for not even being able to have a permanent fund dividend program if we're not able to have some fiscal policy changes now while we have the financial ability, rather than just spend down all of our reserves and at the same time we're going to have decreasing revenues in the state. I don't know that washes.
Well, I believe that government will spend virtually everything that it can at any given point in time. We have luckily been able to save in the permanent fund because we have even been beyond our own appetites with the amount of money that we had. But it's because we had, again, the richest oil field in the history of North America, and we had far beyond the capacity of even this half a million people to spend. Nobody else has been successful at saving any of it in a democratic process.
I disagree with that.
Senator Taylor, and then Senator Lynn.
I think Senator Mackey asked a good question, and that was for you to explain better what you meant by the differential between the income to be generated off of the seed corn and what the seed corn was. And to me, that's always been a very meaningful part of this debate. And what we have actually been doing is we're not only spending the income being generated off that oil field, we're actually spending the royalty too. And why I asked the questions of Senator Ward that I did, because Senator Mackey had felt that he was clear off base as far as the subject before us, and I wanted to bring it back to that subject. And so I have a question for you, Representative Roepberg. Does the House plan rely upon the $11 to $12 million of increased income to the general fund that your bill would divert from going into the permanent fund? Does it rely upon that additional $12 million of income for GF for this year, or next year, for funding the operations of government?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, in my understanding of the plan, and I'm not on the Finance Committee, is that there is a component of approximately $100 million of what's called new revenue. Mm-hmm. And the new revenue sources include the tobacco settlement money, HB 96, they like that because they plugged that one in, and additional dividends from Alaska Housing and
ADA,
right, amounting to a total of $100
million. Well,
it sounds like new revenue means reallocation.
Right. Well, you could because your bill hasn't passed yet. Mm-hmm. But if your bill were to pass, that would actually be 11 to 12 million, according to your statement, of new general fund revenue that would come into to support the daily operation of state government. And that would take 11 to 12 million out of what today, if your bill doesn't pass, is an income stream going directly into the permanent fund.
The corpus, right?
Yeah, the corpus of the fund, right. not the income stream off.
That's correct.
So basically, maybe they haven't counted on it yet, but they obviously are going to be counting on an annualized increase to the general fund of $12 million or so, and it could be much bigger than that, depending upon additional new leases
and bonus money, which can't be computed accurately, right?
Yeah, because we don't do it often enough, right. But it is a significant income source, especially if some of us, I've drafted legislation this year to try and open up our oil resources to some independent drillers. and not to be held hostage by just one company. I mean, that could result in a significant increase in those revenues, which would mean, again, a significant decrease of the amount of seed corn going into the permanent fund. And that's why I thought the question raised by Senator Mackey of the chairman was a very good question. I think people need to understand the difference between the capital that's flowing into that fund and the interest generated off of that capital. If you start spending both the interest and the capital, you leave future generations with a lot less seed corn to plant than what we have today. Now, yours is not a major portion of that, but 11 to 12 million isn't chump change either. So I do think it's worth talking about. Well,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I absolutely agree with this. Any amount of money, I come from the private sector, and once you get over a couple of zeros, it gets my attention. And so I think it is an important thing, and it merits due debate. I think the issue here is that looking back at the history of why this occurred was the availability of spendable funds and the desire to reserve those funds and not make them available for what could be called frivolous spending or luxury type spending at that time. And I think that was a very wise move. I certainly support that because I think it was time to save that money. I think with the cash flow and the complete the level of resource development funds flowing to the state now, that urges that desire, that need to save that and reserve those funds, is that case can't be made. I mean, that's the policy point rests on that, because this is a statutory provision that the legislature made in their wisdom, and it's certainly our ability to change that. We could go from 50 to 30 to whatever amount we wanted to change statutorily, and that's what we're doing here. So this is a responsibility of the legislature to make that decision. So by doing nothing, is then the question becomes whether we should retain the status quo and direct those monies into additional savings in the principal of the fund and or make them available for general fund spending. Right now, with an excess of $1 billion shortfall in cash flow available, it seems logical to me, and I think very strongly, because I'm a part of the anti-tax crowd, if you will. Frankly, I would be happy to debate anybody on the economic impacts of either diminishing dollar for dollar the permanent fund versus an income tax in the state. And I would venture to say that I could come down the side of diminishing the permanent fund dividend as opposed to an income tax, because I think that would have less of a negative economic impact in a macro sense. And I think that case can be easily made. But that's a different debate than we're having here now. But only in the sense that it would have a pretty de minimis effect on the level of the dividend itself. And that is a valid point. But I think it is small enough, particularly, Mr. Chairman, if the conditions aren't right, if we develop a relatively large new field and we had a new income stream and we were sitting there taxing people and then we're saving it. I have a philosophical problem with putting an extraordinary tax burden on people on one hand and then saving it on the other hand. You may want to save it for future generations, but if you're making a tremendous demand on people, which becomes a matter of redistributive type theory, then you get into that type of debate, whether it's a justifiable redistribution of income. I know the chairman said, if I take his meaning right, that he favors current payment for government services and I can understand that. But then you need to be able to see what kind of impacts he had at different income levels and various other things. So that's really a little bit beyond the scope of this bill. This is supposed to be pretty darn simple here. And I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out what I'm trying to do. And I think it is common sense. It only makes some sense because it's not really, it's relatively painless here. And I think it's the proper policy if we do have future production that's replacing. To me, to replace what I call 25% oil with 50% oil doesn't work. The math doesn't pencil out. And I think that's a justifiable policy call on the part of the legislature.
you know, when the decline is there and we have crude oil at 25% and we have the small string of pearls up here generating only a 50% GF type component, it doesn't make sense. I mean, but it certainly doesn't meet the chairman's requirements. He's got a different economic theory, perhaps, than I or other members. But
well, if you take, and if Senator Lincoln will let me just respond, you know, I think my example would be the family farm that has 1,000 acres. And the family farm is farmed, and people work, and people generate income. But there's such a gathering going on at the farmhouse and the barns, and so much getting spent, that the income of the farm can't support the activities of the farm. So that every year we sell off a few more acres of the farm, and we try to salve our conscience by saying that 25% of what we get for selling off the wealth of all generations of our family in the family farm is getting put into the bank. And we spend the other 75%. And we think we're doing a good thing. We forget about the side we've spent, and we're happy with the side we've saved. But in fact, we're diminishing the portfolio of future generations in that process. Now, it's not your fault, and it's not anybody's individual fault, but that for one complete political generation, we have been able to enjoy a level of services which we refuse to and don't want to and don't want to change to pay for in any way. It's not a matter of a debate about which level of payment, which method of payment for the present to pay for the present services is best. It's a matter of how can we get more and pay less and send the bill to somebody else. That's the sad part of the debate, and it's not your fault, and it's not your bill. Your bill is just one small piece of it. But and it's not just in government. It's in our constituency because we've trained it to be in our constituency.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's an excellent analogy, but I would add one little more wrinkle to it, is that Grandma does such great cooking and then as you sell off the land and the income stays there, then the relatives keep pouring in. It has a magnet effect.
That's
and that's something that we need to consider because it's a very serious problem. We have social service levels in this state and the dividend, and we have immigration from throughout the world coming to this country, and they go to their local ethnic group and say, where's the best place in the United States to live? Well, they give money away in Alaska. Why don't you move there? And guess what? People are moving here, and nobody's studied this phenomenon, but I'm going to guarantee you it happens when 20% of the kids in my district in the middle of Anchorage are bilingual kids, and they're not Alaska Native children that we're including there either. You know, so, but that's just a phenomenon that happens. I mean, and that's not necessarily bad or good, but we have to recognize what happens there. We are attracting.
We hate to share the good we have.
That's right. I mean, you know, and
it's
that's something we need to care
about.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lincoln.
Well, see, you should have called on me when
my
turn was up, because now my list is much longer from the statements that were made. And especially on the bilingual part, I guess
I shouldn't have said that.
You should not have said that, Representative Roper, because I really, even though you exclude, as you say, the Native people, I hope that
was a numbers game.
I hope that we are not closing our doors to those who are bilingual. Mr. Chairman, this conversation certainly has gone beyond this bill, so I guess I have the leeway to also do that. I have a concern not so much as it's a dollar this year on the dividend. If it would be, you know, an increase of a dollar or a decrease of a dollar, it's still, when we're talking about a negative impact, regardless of what it is for this year, I think that our constituents have been very loud and clear. And when I served on the Long Range Financial Planning Commission, of which I might add, had we done something with that commission report, we probably would not be in the situation we are today. But we didn't. We put that in the garbage can. And I think that very loud and clear that the constituents across the state, regardless of where you represent and others represent, said, do not touch my dividend. Now, we talked about whether you cap a dividend, some of the other options, but we have no guarantee that it's going to be, you know, $1 this year and next year might be $10 or $20. With the formula, there is no magic number here that we can tell our constituents what that figure will be. So I've got a problem with that, because I really do believe that if it is a saleable plan, then we have time to put that out to the people of Alaska, we should explain why it is that it's important to touch their dividend and sell it. I just think that that's a plan that we should have and not do it ourselves. The other part that I will come back to, and I didn't laugh at your presentation, Mr. Chairman.
No.
I know what you're doing. I'm just kidding with you.
He was laughing at me.
I know. I saw it. The other part of it, and I will say again, is even though you say this is a simple bill, this is a small piece of the overall plan, we still have not seen a plan. As a minority member, I have not seen a plan. And bless Senator Ward's heart that he says he's seen a plan or that it's going to be coming out tomorrow. I have not seen a plan. I have not seen a plan on our side. So this small piece, I don't know how it fits in. I don't know if this is 1% of a plan or 10% of a plan. I just don't know how it fits in. And I think it's unfortunate that we have pieces that are coming our way that is supposed to somehow, this puzzle is supposed to come out whole at the end, but I can't find the edges of it yet to even get started on it. So I have a lot of difficulty, I guess, on moving ahead with even a small piece until I know where we're going here. The other part that I really feel that I must respond to is the idea that we have a budget for a mere 600,000 people that is far more than any other state. Well, I have to remind folks around this table and in the listening audience that we have a state that's unlike any other state as well. You cannot drive to my community. You cannot drive to probably 90% of the 226 villages that we've got in the state of Alaska. You can't simply get on the telephone and say, we need a trooper here in the next 5 minutes. That trooper has to get onto an airplane, has to have a pilot, has to have gas for that plane, has to, whatever the situation is, and we could go on and on and on of the waterways that we've got that we have to protect for our resources is phenomenal. It's unlike any other state. So I don't think that we can compare, and I'm very glad we can't compare our state to any other state. So we need to, when we look at what this plan is for the whole state, it is for the whole state. And this might be very, very good, Representative Roepberg. I don't like voting, and I probably will not vote for a part of it that does not go back to the people for a vote if it affects the permanent fund. I just have a problem with that. But the other part of it might be good. I don't know until I see what that overall plan is that is non-existent. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I wrote down that I agreed with the senator, but at the very first part, but I can't remember what I agreed with her about. But I actually agree with everything she said, quite frankly. And one of those is that, except her reluctance to vote for my bill, I'll take exception to that, is that I guess we are talking about a plan, and as I, mea culpa, this was not part of a plan, it was adopted. You know, I'm guilty by association here, only because it's such a good bill that people wanted to adopt it, you see, my theory. But we are talking about a plan. I think it is responsibility of this legislature to come forward with a plan. I think we should have the vote of the people. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that we should have that vote probably this year rather than during an election year. And that's why it makes it important that we consider something. I think it would be good to take a plan out to the voters in the interim and talk about it. But then if we are going to have a contingency element of a vote, then I would be very fearful of putting it on the November ballot, only because then we're late in implementing the plan, number one, and some of the economies that are part of the plan we would not be realizing. And whatever that plan is, and believe me, the House has been working on a plan for over 3 months, very arduously. And there's a general consensus, but there's a lot of loose ends. And they recognize that we have to get concurrence from the younger body, the Senate. And we appreciate that. But, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest, and I've heard this comment about this bill, that because there's some nexus between this legislation and a plan, that we prefer to see the whole plan. The minority in the House, they raised the same question on the floor, albeit I had some minority support for the bill. But nevertheless, I appreciate that point. But I also ask, Mr. Chairman, that you understand, and I think you do, that this is a legislative action that was needed to travel through to this point, so it could be enacted this year if that was the will of the bodies. And that's why we brought it forward now. And that's why I had to get out front of the rest of the people, because I wanted to be out front anyway. But the I would ask that the committee either move this bill for contemplation of a broader scope, and or if the chairman so desired to hold it, if he so desired to satisfy himself on that. I think it would be a mistake to try to for this to die at this juncture, because I think it will be a essential element, and I posit and I'll suggest to Senator Ward that he take another look at it. Because if he's going to have a resource development plan, he's going to need this bill, or the numbers won't work. And I'm a number cruncher. And I'll suggest that.
Further questions? Senator Mackey.
I was just going to ask, Mr. Chairman, what is your pleasure or your intention as far as, are you intending to hold the bill for?
Well, I'm not satisfied with the bill, at least not okay. Yet, but I don't know.
Okay, Senator Taylor. I'll offer a motion.
I guess I was surprised. I thought the bill, when I first saw it, was just kind of a standalone thing, and the question was, do we divert whatever the number was? And I really appreciate that you brought it in today, because I didn't know, on average, what amount of income that was supposed to flow into the fund would now be diverted by this bill into the daily operations of state government. And I appreciate that. But I thought you had said earlier that in your closing comments there, you said that you believed that your bill would be part and parcel of whatever plan took place. And when I'd ask you the question earlier, if you knew whether or not your additional $11 or $12 million of new income coming into the general fund was part of the $100 million that you said they had contemplated in their House plan. I didn't want to get off on all these plan things, but it's obvious that this is some part of it.
They've adopted it, yeah.
So they haven't then adopted your...
That's part of the $100 million, I mentioned.
That's part of the $100 million.
Yeah.
I thought when you answered Senator Mackey's question, you got to $100 million without this 12.
I'm sorry if you misunderstood that.
I did, obviously.
But it wasn't my fault. They had just adopted it.
Yeah. So as a consequence, passage of your legislation to divert money from the corpus of the permanent fund into the daily operations of state government is now part of their the House plan.
As I understand it, yes, Senator.
Yeah, okay.
And as I indicated, I thought just because it saw the merit of the bill.
One other thing, Senator Ward indicated that he had taken as best he could the House plan, the governor's plan, he tried to take every plan, I guess it was out there, or it was a scheme or dream by anybody, and he tried to see whether the numbers would be affected if we waited until the general election in November of 2000 to ask the people what they felt about these plans and whether or not they felt it was time to provide for an invasion of the fund. And he had indicated from his crunch of the numbers, so to speak, that all of the plans still worked just as well. I know I talked to Senator Torgerson the other day, and he told me that the governor's tax plan falls off a cliff in about 12 years out. And I noticed when Senator Ward was talking, he said that if you defer until November of 2000 and then were to enact the governor's tax plan, that it falls off the cliff in the year 14 years out. So maybe at least those two senators have crunched different numbers but come up with kind of the same result. And I wondered when you said that this was part and parcel of their plan and that Senator Ward's, anything he was going to do on resources would need this. Are you assuming that the new income from resource generation with passage of your legislation would benefit the general fund to the expense of the corpus of the permanent fund? Is that what I hear you saying?
I think any new what they've done, I think, in the plan was use what I call a Logsdon prospective.
Right.
But there also, I think there's some additional work where they're trying to get a sensitivity matrix as to probabilities of new field of production to try to enhance the probability of resource income. And but as I say, I'm not part of the brain trust on the plan, so I don't know exactly. But I think there's the need to make assumptions in any planning document that a lot of the work has been done in trying to come up with rational assumptions. And I think in large part they've used the Department of Revenue's projection of incomes. That's the House plan, which is distinct from what's called the All-Alaska plan, which posited a $13 barrel flat.
What I think is going to skew this is that if I understand the plans that are alternatives to waiting through the election, they take money from permanent fund accounts now, which generate higher income than the CBR accounts.
Sure.
So you actually lose in just that equation of income from that transaction. And I think may overcome some of the other things that people are putting in as variables.
I think they create a basket in endowment, basically, in the earnings reserve. So the rate of return on the CBR corpus and other revenues is higher, because that's one of the failures of the CBR, is the Department of Revenue's they tried at the direction of the legislature a couple years ago to raise their rate of returns, but they're in their second bucket or tranche, and so they're down to short-term investment vehicles. It's therefore, the rate of return and the income to the state is lower. And that's one thing that perhaps I've had some influence on the House plan, was to make sure that all of those assets were combined so they had a larger corpus, and actually they would be managed as part of the permanent fund and therefore generate a higher rate of return. And I think that's an important element because of the rate of return expectations on any asset that we have. It should be maximized.
Well, unless you do that, any plan that takes from the permanent fund earlier costs you more than waiting, because it's the highest earning account as compared to the CBR or any other.
Well, there's an endowment provision. That's the thing. It's called the combined endowment concept. Mm-hmm. So it's set at 5.75, but it's based on certain assumptions of return and so forth.
And you increase those. Just one last thing.
Senator Taylor.
Representative Roekberg, if I had my druthers, and using the concept of seed corn versus eating it up today, which I really think is very important and really hasn't been debated much about the permanent fund or the money that flows into it. On your legislation, I would go the opposite direction. I would place all of those royalty incomes, not just 50% of them, or not just 25% of them, I'd place 100% of them into the permanent fund and not let people spend that bonus money and those royalty monies and other things that are lease monies that are coming into us. I wouldn't let them spend that money in today's budget. Instead, I would invest that in the permanent fund, and when the day comes, sometime in the future, when people need to rely upon an income source and a stream of income, they would then have a stable, steady stream of income from all of those monies. And I think that's where the real philosophical discussion occurs, is should we be saving the seed corn or should we be eating it today?
It all depends on the price of oil, Senator. It all depends on the price of oil. I mean, we've gone through a crapshoot here, and we've been very fortunate because of the OPEC countries and the policies and the non-OPEC.